So wait, so then we're buying comics.
Right.
But then we decided to make comics. We made an attempt anyway.
Yeah, we made a few attempts, and I still think that they could have been really solid books. But
I need to track down this kid, Rob McHugh.
Yeah.
He was 2 years younger than us. He was like, I don't know, very cartoony and out there and dynamic, and had this crazy, crazy style and crazy life and lifestyle. And poor kid who actually, I just came across the article where he got arrested. It was in Newsday. There's an article of him getting arrested, putting his tag on the wall, and his tag was Leprolopicus, which is funny
a role
because
joke.
That it was actually, this is, we were sitting at George's table, and I was trying to explain how Puck in the X-Men cartoon, what his voice sounded like, and I tried to say Lucky the Leprechaun. And instead, it went something more like, he sounds like Leprolopicus. And like, now I can only even do the Christian lore interpretation of that, because everybody made fun of me for like endlessly about that. I think we laughed literally about 2 hours.
There was a lot of making fun of Kurt because it affected him so much. So it was fun to do it. You got an instant reaction.
I was a squirmer.
Yeah.
And
he was an open wound.
I still am, actually. Yeah. I just like to say that I haven't really eaten in 2 days. I haven't been home either. I'm wearing the same thing I wore to the studio yesterday, and I drank a lot of alcohol last night at karaoke, but I did not sing. I chickened out. I was going to do Tenacious D, but they actually have Fuck Her Gently, so I mean, I don't even know if I can say
language.
That on the air, as it were, but
or in my apartment, as it were.
And then I fought with Lauren, my girlfriend, our first like real fight. And even though we're true love, you have to have that first fight.
Ridiculous.
And it was ridiculous. I was curled up fetal and crying and making gun motions to my brain. I mean, that's the way I roll.
Good,
you know,
Kurt.
Like, you know, I've got some medication. It's hers, but
nice.
I'll probably take it in a few minutes.
Yeah, so that's a bit of the open wound.
So we tried to make comics despite my social handicaps.
Yeah, it was kind of like a...
Or because of.
It was kind of a, you know, image-inspired, where we were going to do an anthology. And each one of us would kind of create a concept and pair up with an artist. Except for me, I didn't have an artist, I don't think.
No, but I was trying to remember what they were. I think ours was called Suffrage.
Yours was Suffrage, and it was kind of like a cartoony,
spawny, but goofy.
Yeah, like a guy who couldn't be killed, but he could feel pain.
Yeah, and there were chains. That's all I remember. I guess Rob just wanted to throw chains.
Right, and then Mastermaker and what was that kid's name? I don't remember his name.
He was in the art class, and
he
drew like a rip-off of Wills Portacio.
Yeah, and they were going to do like Pack Rat and Big Gunman or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
but it was like a mentor book. A guy takes a little girl on,
right,
and teaches her how to be a hero. And I was going to do The Death's Head. Which was like a, I guess it was kind of like a Punisher ripoff. But he was a soldier who died and came back to life. And I guess Crow v. the Punisher. But it was interesting and never happened.
Yeah, some sketches, some notes, a little bit of script probably.
Yeah.
But that was about it. I don't know. Did we make another attempt?
We did, with the Legion of Strange.
Oh, yeah. We role-played this one group that we liked so much that... that's still pretty iconic, actually. We could sell that as a horror concept, kind of.
Oh, absolutely.
I remember, well, I'll say my character, because I remember that right off the bat, is Hellhound.
Right.
And I was more of a were-dog than a werewolf.
This was another one of those where I was the game master for this, for DC Heroes. And I had them all make kids, and then I would give them powers, and I made Kurt into like a werewolf, weredog. My character was a little girl, and she became super smart. Mike Mastermaker's character was, he was like a punk kid, like a tough guy kid, and he inherited like alien technology, but it was alien technology of like a race of thieves or something, so he could like turn intangible and turn invisible.
And, right, and
but it was only
shadows.
Good like on defense. It had no offensive capabilities.
Right, which of course you knew would be the one thing that would really irk him.
Right. And then George was Zenith, right? And he was a kid who got the stereotypical superhero powers: energy blast. You know, he couldn't be harmed, and he could fly.
But totally like a character that George played, because he was usually George in any role-playing character, but this one was sort of like him at his most George, where he was just sort of clueless. He'd put on a costume, he'd change, he'd just be retarded for no reason, he'd just say his name was something, even though it was something else.
But it was good, because there was a kind of like innocence to it that helped. Well, these characters, they really made an impression on us, so we thought we could do a series.
I remember the sketches. We should see if we could dig up some. I think I still have some of my
script. I might have some too. I might have the script.
Really?
We did like two scripts, I think. We did the first and second issue, and we actually like had full scripts basically and a whole storyline, plotted it out. But and I think we actually drew the first few pages.
Oh yeah. I do remember the actual pages.
Yeah. But then it just fell apart because you know.
Well, mostly because we hated Master Maker. I mean, I'll have to straight up say it. I mean, he was annoying, but he was the artist, and you know, he thought he knew what was best, as most artists do. But
knows, the writer knows what's best.
You know what? I mean, honestly, I would not want to be an artist. It looks so intensive. I look at them like this kid, Dave Newbold, that I want to try and start a webcomic with. He did this Batman sketch, and the Batman's, you know, black and shadowy and whatnot, and I've seen Batman before, but the background is like the most intense city-drawn thing, and it's like, it's one page, and it's like, if I write, you know, Batman standing on a chimney and, like, in the entire city looms behind
him. That's it. It takes 2 seconds to write that.
I just wrote that. Yeah. So he's got to then spend an entire day looking at buildings, seeing how they all fit together, making up a whole city, like an architect or whatever, you know, like drawing up plans for it.
Yeah.
So I would not want to be an artist, but they spend that much time trying to do that.
Yeah.
That I think story and structure and things like that
need to really be spot on.
Right, and I think I've honed myself enough at that point at this point that I know those things come almost instinctually by watching the worst TV and movies possible.
Know what not to do.
Asian movies are my main influence on writing in anything because they're the most insane and over the top, and they just, when they miss a beat or something like that, it's like you could see it so obviously, where in American movies I feel like they try and cover it up with whatever.
They try to fill every single second with something.
Yeah, in an Asian movie, if it doesn't work or something doesn't go, they just keep going.
Yeah.
Which I think is like what I finally reached at a point of my writing now.
Yeah. So, let's talk about our writing.
I know. Like, so, we years pass by. We both do school, and I tried to do graphic design for whatever reason, and then started Liquid Fury in 2001. I got paid for some early scripts because I went on digital webbing actually way back in the day, and I actually wouldn't be writing if it wasn't for Warren Ellis's forums, which really got me on the web looking for people who were looking for people to write comics. And I found some, got paid for five scripts, never finished off the last four issue miniseries. Generic concepts, but I tried to do a twist on them, and the guy loved them. Then I started doing Liquid Fury with Chris Chua, which we spent years and years on, printed up some preview issues. You can see it up on 1010studios.com. We have it up there, 22 pages, just waiting to be finished lettered. I unfortunately lost about 60 pages of lettered work when my computer died. While backing it up.
So if you want to buy Kurt a new computer, just let us know.
This is a call out there because I need something that I can also now edit film on and maybe do special effects.
You'll be investing in a career.
Exactly. I'll pay you back. But so then I tried to do that comic and I kind of stalled out, started a novel, and just am waiting to finish that all up now as I'm taking a break from New School University.
Nice. My writing, I guess, I was working in a bookstore for a long time and working in inventory. So a lot of my influences were just reading whatever. And the stuff that I loved to read was conspiracy stuff and horror stuff. One of my favorite writers is H.P. Lovecraft. And one of my favorite comic writers is Alan Moore. And one of my favorite just straight prose or fiction is Umberto Eco. So I really love writers who are able to take these concepts that have been around forever. With Alan Moore, it's been superheroes. With Umberto Eco, it's kind of like the human psyche and human history. And with Lovecraft, it's, you know, the how we perceive horror, what scares us. And they all took these themes and turned them completely upside down and put a whole new spin on them. Watchmen, pick up The Call of Cthulhu if you have a chance. It's a great horror tale.
Shout out to Cthulhu.
Yeah, told in a really crazy way where everything that's bad has already happened, but it still manages to be ominous and scary. Just because it's like the Cuban Missile Crisis, what could have happened? And Umberto Eco, read Foucault's Pendulum. I don't think I need to say any more than that.
I have not, unfortunately, read any of this. Great. I do want to read Umberto Eco, yeah. Actually. I keep hearing stuff about him, but I have to get through a lot of books. Yeah. But I have read the Cthulhu coming up out of the ocean story.
The Call of Cthulhu.
Yeah, and I think I probably have read Shadow over Innsmouth.
Yeah, that was a good one, too.
But, yeah.
So my writing generally tries to kind of take a different slant on things. Tom Sawyer, there's not much different that you could do with it. But you could look at my Tom Sawyer stuff. It's on Amazon and Google Books. And there's a few pages up there. Or the Clone Wars. I did do a Clone Wars story, which was cool, called One Battle. And it was a great opportunity that I got through Ben Caldwell, who was an artist on, I think, the first volume, Clone Wars Adventures Volume 1. And my idea for it was to kind of showcase the clone troopers a little bit, but more show the raw power of a Jedi. So it's, I think it's like 10 pages or something. It's really short, but it's a great battle scene, and I think it really shows how crazy a Jedi can be, like one Jedi.
Yeah, which with the animated series, Clone Wars, the original one was really good, and the action was awesome, but in the books it wasn't so much, but I thought you brought the over-the-top action to it, which I liked. But, you know, looking, I just Googled you now, so.
Right.
But, like, so I think I've Googled you before, which is fun, but I like, Fifth Hit, I think it says. Tim Musi is the author of The Odyssey in Contemporary Verse by Robert Fitzgerald.
Yeah, which is not true.
I mean, it's true.
It's true. I did an adaptation of The Odyssey, which is coming out in October through Sterling Books.
Aren't all the versions just adaptations?
Yeah,
really?
Well, that's true. But I did not translate The Odyssey in original verse. And, I think that's off of, what is that, like,
Goodreads,
yeah,
but library thing, whatever that is, and it mentions Tom Sawyer.
Yeah,
but yeah, no, I mean, you come up as an author,
yeah, which is cool. I like to Google myself when I'm alone and lonely sometimes.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, let me see now. Now I'm curious. I don't even know.
And I actually set up there's a thing called Google Alerts. And anybody could do it. Just go to Google Alerts and you can have it set up. It's kind of like an email service where if anybody blogs your name, or, you know, if any article has your name in it or whatever search query you want in it, you'll get an email about it. So if anybody publishes a blog post, or if there's ever an article about me in it, I'll get an email about it. So I knew that you wrote about on your blog, you did your Saturday night talk show or whatever, night talk show.
Yeah, yeah.
And you mentioned me in it, so I got an email about it.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah. I didn't know that.
So I keep tabs. I'm watching you all.
Well, I Googled myself now. First of all, it asked if I meant Kurt Christensen, S-E-N, who I think is actually like a Dutch director or something like that. But I'm looking for anything that's actually me, which is, I don't think any of these. Although, actually, I think here's a post from me in the Invisibles Yahoo group.
Wow.
Which, it's old school, but my Yahoo ID used to be Two Gun Killer in the Chow Yun Fat vein. Wow. I really... 2002.
Wow, that's a long time.
I know. I used to be very active on the internet because I was a loser living on Long Island.
Yeah.
And I had nothing to do. And I was really on there all the time. And now, not that I'm not a loser now, but I just can't go on the internet. It kind of bothers me. I can't find the post where it says, because it says about my writing, which I'm interested in.
I used to be heavily into Tribe. I think it's tribe.net.
Yeah, I remember that.
Because I used to work at a local New York paper called Newsday as the desk assistant to the editors. And so I was on there. I was on Tribe a lot, just making connections and making friends. And I actually made a lot of friends, some people that I still talk to that live in Tokyo and live in California. But yeah, I haven't been able to get into the swing of things on the internet in a while. I keep trying to join some of Warren Ellis's forums, but they always seem like so established and clicky, even.
Oh, of course. You gotta have strong internet kung fu, apparently, to hang in the Warren Ellis crowd. I actually was kicked off of the... I think it was the first incarnation of the forum, the actual forum, though. And I think I posted that Ian Churchill was a retard for his ideas on the X-Men when he was doing it with, I think it was Joe Casey.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he wanted to give Nightcrawler a lightsaber, and he wanted to give Angel a gun that shot Halo energy discs.
Yeah.
He actually said this in a Wizard interview. So I showed up and said he was a retard, and I got kicked off after my first post.
Because you're intolerant.
But I am intolerant. But it was inspirational because I don't need to be a Warren Ellis groupie. I'm my own person.
Exactly.
He set me off, and then he said, "You know, I see potential in this kid, and I'm gonna cut him off.
Right.
And let him sink or swim.
Yeah.
You know. And here I am swimming, Warren. Fuck you. No, seriously, I love your comics. Finish Planetary, please.
I thought he did.
Did he? No,
I don't know.
You said that last time, and that's false
like
information.
Ago. So what else? What do you like to read?
What do I like to read? Well, actually, right now, here's my inspirational book.
Right.
Because now I'm unemployed. I'm trying to be a freelance writer in any way, shape, or form, and including podcasting this. So I picked up this book. It was between How to Be a Six-Figure Freelance Writer, which had money on the cover and totally just did not appeal to me in general, but right now I'd like some money. But it was between that and this, I don't even know how to describe it. It's very like retro hipstery, reminds me of old greeting cards cover. How to become a Famous Writer Before You're Dead, Your Words in Print and Your Name in Lights, Ariel Gore. And about 40 pages into it, and it actually is, you know, your typical self-help writing class in a book, but I just like her sensibility. It's a little more punk rock. I mean, this chick apparently was like traveling the world, like pretty much hostel to hostel, no money, been everywhere, then became like a single mom at like 21 and just keeps writing and writing books. And I don't know, some of her sensibilities in here is just take it step by step into writing, because, you know, I want to write and have been writing forever, but like sometimes you just gotta
make some money off of it.
Well, and you also got to start the very first steps and kind of relearn what you take for granted and think that you already know.
Yeah.
And get the ego out of the way. But it's also actually what's really funny about this is the whole part of your words and print and your name and lights comes with the idea of branding yourself and sort of being what she calls a lit star. She says, Walt Whitman was a lit star, Gertrude Stein was a lit star, Henry Miller and Annie Nin were lit stars, Allen Ginsberg, Ken Kesey, and Charles Bukowski, major lit stars, you know, blah, blah, blah. But it's like how to sort of build up your own persona to do that and not, you know, do it in a way to just market yourself. And I think that's what I've been trying to do with Comic Book Rockstar, which is a super obnoxious you know, title to give to myself.
But it works.
I blame Joe Casey, who I sat with, Joe Kelly and Joe Casey. I mean, I got success with Liquid Fury kind of quick, and we were sitting at the Man of Action table back when Ben 10 was just a pitch that Joe Kelly was trying to sell to apparently Jeff John's blue-haired wife who worked at Cartoon Network. So I was seeing all these people come and go, like these, you know, major... people I knew their names, but you know, they're all just coming by and saying hi to, you know, Steven Seagal and Joe Casey and Joe Kelly and Duncan Merlot, and sitting next to Richard Starkings and Tim Sale, and Matt Wagner even came over, and I couldn't handle it. I had to leave. But seeing all that go down, it was like I felt so insecure. I was just like this loser still living on Long Island, 27, like, you know, seemingly like life experience of like a, you know, 12-year-old. And so I was like, you know, I just need to do something, go crazy and kind of reinvent myself. So that's why when I came back from San Diego in 2004, Tim actually brought me out to the city to go to PS1, and we saw Scissor Sisters. I thought I was going to a museum opening. It turned out to a Euro dance club in the middle of Long Island City.
Yeah, PS1 is in Long Island City. It was an old school PS1, but then the MoMA took it over, and they have some art exhibits in there, but during the summer they have a big schoolyard that's a schoolyard art exhibit, and they have like big dance parties and stuff out there. It's very cool.
Yeah, and so like I had just started getting into the Scissor Sisters in there. I had no idea they were going to be there. So like, I mean, anytime there's dancing, you know, I'm like, I'm down. But you know, actually that was even before like I was really feeling it. But then a week later I came out again, saw our band, and came out here and just reinvented myself as a comic book rock star. But then like I bought into my own ego and then didn't do any writing. So I backtracked a little bit and kind of figured out my stuff and got to a point where now I just want to really push my writing out there, and I'm stuck with comic book rock star, unfortunately.
Or but that's good. You can reinvent it.
Yeah. And so, I mean, the main thing behind it, I feel like I need to explain it before anybody, like, calls me out and makes fun of me. Not that that'll stop them, but, you know, like, it's about, like, living like a rock star. I always thought, like, the thing about rock stars is they all seem to self-destruct and whatnot when they become famous. And it's the whole road there, you know, where you're struggling and you don't have anything in your band, trying to put it together and, you know, struggling really is the key. And that's the rock star part to it. And I mean, I'm struggling. I'm poor. I have no money. And, you know, I just went to Amsterdam and Paris, you know, on credit cards and threw up mushrooms and, you know, was high at the Anne Frank house. So, I mean, you know, that's pretty rock star, I have to say.
Yeah, you're going to be high.
I came back and fell in love with my soulmate, who I'll, you know, possibly be with forever. I mean, that seems to be the way it's going, which is crazy. And then quit my job to become a writer and start a podcast where I will, you know, talk to you enough that you'll want to read my stuff.
So what do you feel is the goal of this podcast? What do you want to see out of it?
I really would just like to do this as a weekly thing where we just pick up an audience. You know, I thought about it on the way here. I was really nervous about it and apprehensive now that we were finally going to do it. But I think, you know, I was trying to psych myself out, like being like, how many people out there have podcasts about comics or whatnot? But it's about asserting the fact that you have something to say, or you want to, you know, you just want to say something. And I know so many creative people that have the capability with technology, and why not do something? Yeah. So why not, you know, meet up with you once a week and yeah. discuss what we're going to write and keep each other on track and right. record it all so people can listen to it and laugh at us and hopefully
yeah.
see the creative process at work and yeah. understand and be more interested in our writing.
Absolutely. And I think it's a great idea to showcase ourselves like this, because too many people say they're going to do something and then never do it, or just say they don't have anything to say when everybody has something to say. Everybody has a story to tell. And I think that would be another cool thing to do with this, is not only showcase our own work, like kind of a digital salon where we do readings of our work, but also have other people who are working in the field, either of publishing, book publishing, story publishing, or comic publishing, because we do have a lot of connections in the field. We do know a lot of people who are working, who are taking the first steps to get in there.
Yeah, oddly enough, I don't know how that happened, but I have to say, you missed out on New York Comic Con, where
yes,
I walked around and people I thought maybe possibly could remember uh-huh. me from the years of walking around with Chris Chua, standing awkwardly right. quiet off to right. the side as he talks to every single comic pro you can possibly yeah. imagine. A lot of them remembered me, and it was weird,
cool.
especially with, this is the funniest moment I think I had. Oh, well, actually, I want to tell a story about Comic-Con anyway, but I was walking by the DC booth, and they, you know, they're promoting this Zuda Comics, which I'm trying to work on a
yeah,
webcomic for.
It's very cool. It's kind of like a DIY web comics.
Yeah, they'll host it and everything. You just have
yeah.
to submit it. And there's actually some sort of a contest, which I have to look more into about, you know, actually winning money and getting, you know,
yeah.
further. But here was this kid, Kevin Colden, who was, I really liked his stuff years ago. I met him through Chua. They went to the Joe Kubert School together years ago. And here he was. And he was, you know, I had run into him earlier in the city. He actually became my landlord for a short amount of time when
wow.
I was living down on Delancey and Clinton. Totally randomly saw him as I was moving out, actually. And I was like, wow, you know, like we lived in the same building for a month and we didn't even know.
Wow.
But so he sees me and I'm like, oh, hey, what's going on? You know, and the last time I'd seen him was probably 2 years prior, where he was in Artist Alley, you know, schlepping some book. But now here he was sitting in, you know, at the DC table, surrounded by people. And I was telling him about the studio space, and I was like, yeah, I just don't get out there as much. And he's like, where is it? And I told him Smith and 9th Street stop with, you know, Riley Brown.
In Brooklyn.
In Brooklyn. And he's like, oh, yeah, this guy over here was trying to talk me into going out there, too. I think it's right there. And I look over, and it's Dean Haspiel, and he's like, oh, yeah, you're the guy that never comes to the studio. So
yeah,
it's like, Dean Haspiel sitting at the DC booth, I didn't even realize he's there, points me out and says that. Like, I feel like, you know, then I stopped by, I saw Joe Kelly, I talked to him. He was really, like, kind of interested in what I was doing when I was, like, trying to flatter him by talking about what he's doing.
Nice.
But, you know, like, he wants me to send some stuff, so I'm going to send some over his way. But what kind of blew my mind at this party was that, all right, so I have some social anxiety, so I, you know, I try and get out there, but I went to the Marvel party after, you know, everybody was allowed in, after it was not exclusive anymore.
Right.
And I was sitting there talking to David Mack, who I had talked to a couple of times
wow.
before, and actually was on the phone in Pittsburgh with my girlfriend trying to talk her down at the same time he was on the phone with his girlfriend trying to talk her down. And we sort of gave each other the nod, and then
yeah.
we talked, you know, at a couple of other shows, because I was really into his Kabuki series at that time. But so it was a little weird to just kind of be casual and have him know me enough that we've talked enough that he, you know, was talking to me at a bar. And I was wearing my Flaming Carrot shirt, and he's like, all right, well, I'll be right back. So David Mack walks off, and next thing I know, he comes back with Bob Burden,
wow.
creator of Flaming Carrot, which is probably one of my favorite comics of all time. It's in my top five for sure. And so I'm sitting there, you know, wearing the band's T-shirt at the band's performance suddenly.